Welcome back to the Balance is Bullshit podcast, the real stories of blending motherhood and career, where we're sitting down with mamas and caregivers that are making waves in their career. And we get the unvarnished version of what it's like, their trade-offs, the epiphanies, the milestones. Whether you're here because it's a tough day, you're celebrating, or you want to get tools to craft your most fulfilled life, we've got you. And remember, you're welcome here as your whole self, not just your best self. Let's get to today's episode. Hey everybody, Jess Green here. I'm so excited for today's episode. You'll get a chance to hear from Jamie Diglio, who is the CEO at InFirst Consulting. She is a mom of two, and she's also this powerhouse CEO that's had an incredible career, but hasn't had that career without its challenges. She actually is really well known now for her TEDx talk, From War Room to Win Room, Change Your Room, Change Your Life, where she talks about hitting a breaking point where literally she couldn't feel her legs as a mother of two in a high pressure job, and what she did to really turn that around and now makes it her mission to help others have a really successful, fulfilling career without burnout and beating yourself up along the way. From a bio perspective, Jamie spent 20 years as a top 1% performer in sales leadership at companies like Gartner, Microsoft, Slalom. She's coached thousands of people. And in that time, the number one thing she's learned is that what's holding people back is their thinking. It's not a lack of training, skills, or technology. And aside from being a very successful CEO, Jamie is generous with her time and skills when it comes to contributing to her community. After that bio, I'm not sure there's any better person for us to talk to and hear from about blending motherhood and career, and frankly, all of life, than Jamie. So excited for you to hear a bit of her journey, and I have a feeling you might leave a bit inspired and a lot less alone if you're going through a point of struggle or where you feel like you're breaking. There is light at the end of that tunnel. So let's hear from Jamie. Have fun.
All right. Well, let's jump in. I like to start these conversations, if it's okay with you, by just asking how you're doing. I mean, we're recording on a Friday, which is sometimes a great thing, but also sometimes you're drained at the end of the week. Like, how are you feeling today?
Well, today I was traveling the whole beginning of the week, working with some great clients. And so I'm kind of jamming packed all of the things that needed to get done this week, like into the end of the week. And, ironically, like after this, I got to take my daughter to an appointment. And so I'm feeling good. You know, I mean, it's just, this is life, right? This is, we figure it out.
We do. The team got to hear your intro, but I would love to start with who you are just from your words, because I think so much about what's important with this and creating connection amongst other mamas or caregivers and people that are working is, where did you come from? Who are you as a human before we get into the work thing? Because so much of how we've grown up and developed ourselves impacts that. So can you take us back to the beginning and tell us a little bit about you, the human?
Sure. So I'm from Boston. I think I mentioned that in my TED talk.
Yes.
I am the oldest of three. I was the kid who did terrible in school.
Yep. Okay.
not terrible, but yeah. I was not the greatest student. And I learned early on that I had to figure out different ways to be successful than like the traditional route. So if I had to like sum up my, I think like early life and like what's taken me to now, is that I've really have always been the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
Like really that underdog that when somebody took a chance on me, they won. And I won because I was like not a traditional, like I was like the overweight kid who started sports and then ended up being really good at sports. The kid that didn't do great in school and really I struggled a lot, and you know, I figured out how to hone into the things that were my winning formula, like my zone of success. And I think that that's something for me that's foundational with helping people to find their voice and to see their own uniqueness and like embrace that. That all comes from being a kid and being told that I wasn't good enough. You know, I wasn't smart enough. And not my parents. My parents were supportive, but just like the whole school system and
the system. Yeah.
System of sort of how it looks at you're smart, you're not smart. You know, what success is taught to us in, you know, in K through 12. So that's like a foundational underpinning for me and like why I'm so passionate about helping people to, you know, unlock, you know, their genius.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's so much of that I'm reacting to. One is school is so binary with grades. I'm curious to hear when you say you were the underdog and you think about that, how did you, like, when you look back, do you remember feeling like the underdog or feeling like, yeah, I'm perceived as the underdog, but like you said, you take a bet on me, I take a bet on myself, we're both going to win. Did you have that underlying confidence or did you struggle with that for a while because you were felt like the underdog?
Oh no, I struggled with it. I mean, I struggled with confidence from a pretty early age. Like I said, I was like the overweight kid.
Yeah.
Incredibly quiet. I have this specific memory of being in second grade and we had to get up and talk about something. And I remember the teacher went around the entire room and like, who's next? Who's next? And I never went. And I was like, maybe they'll notice that I never went because I was so petrified to speak. And actually,
my heart.
But I think about like up until about sixth grade, I wanted to be in business.
How did that shift? Like when and how did you see that evolve?
Sports was helpful for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my parents, I think, were just trying to find something that I liked. And I, you know, tried to do a lot of different things. And once I got into sports, and so this is why I say I'm like the underdog, because like I wasn't like super athletic, but I was determined. So once I started to like see that if I could practice and if I practiced, I would get better. Then that was the thing for me that I was like, oh, okay. Like I can lean into this. And you know, it just elevates your ability to go, oh, wow, you know, I can get better. I, you know, this is progress. And I think that if I like, not to go completely to, you know, however long ago that was like 30 something years ago, I'm aging myself. But I think one of the challenges we have today with people is that people want to win, but they don't want to put in the practice. And wants to like be an instant success in things. And I'm like, that's not how life works. And the more we try to pretend that we're, you know, or, you know, it's like the give everybody the trophy thing. I mean, I have young kids and we didn't back then, not everybody got a trophy, you know?
And then you wanted it more and you're like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to figure out how to practice. Well, sometimes, but go practice and get it the next time or the next time.
And that's the thing when you really understand the brain science around it is like kids, when kids don't win, but you still give them the trophy and they still get the thing, that doesn't, it might be a short term, like I got a thing, but they know they didn't win.
It's so interesting. You mentioned you're a mama, how old your kids are, what stage of motherhood you're in, but I'm curious how that has shaped, how your childhood experience has really shaped the mom you are.
Yeah, I think, so I have two kids. They are now, I always like to like think, cause I'm like, wait, how old are
you? I know.
It's crazy. Like I know as a mom, when people are like so fast and you're like, shut up, you know, I'm in the grind, but they are 13 and 11. So I have a daughter who's 13. My son is 11 and I just took my daughter to high school orientation this week. So that was pretty crazy. You know, I mean, I really struggled being a mom in early on. And I mean, we all struggle. but trying to make sure we're doing the right things. I mean, I think for me, it was, I remember specifically when my daughter was like two and she's like super smart. And she would freak out when I would leave because I would try to sneak out of the house because I didn't want her to freak out. But what I realized was the fact that I was sneaking out and not letting her know what was happening, even though she was two, I realized that that was producing a way worse level of anxiety in her. And so what I started to do is be like, okay, mommy is going to leave, but I'm going to come back at XYZ time and you're going to see me again. And will you be here and, you know, and wait for me and wave to me in the window. And so it was in that moment where I realized, I was like, we tend to want to like hide everything from our kids, hide it, but just like not talk about our work or not talk about what we're doing or talk about our problems. And one of the things that I started to really lean into was talking to my kids early on about why mommy works, you know, to take care of the family. And if you want to, you know, that's where we get money, and really explaining that at a very early age. And a lot of people would like say to me, well, why like that? They're too young. And I'm like, our kids are very, very smart, you know, right? They are so smart and they are so unfiltered and so curious. And so one of those things about how you're leaning into even sharing, you know, mommy's feeling a little overwhelmed. She's got a lot of things going on at work right now. This is and even going into, hey, you know, this is the problem I have with, you know, whatever. What do you think I should do?
Oh, I love that.
You think would be love great. That. What would be the right choice?
I'm a big sharer, but I engaging them in the solution, in the getting their opinion, that is next level.
Right? But it's such a simple thing of not just, because that was for me also of like not holding on to everything, not trying to fix everything, not trying to just like do it all, because there's this, I don't know when we were taught this, but I do think a big part of it, and obviously having a 13-year-old daughter who excels at school, like she and I are the complete opposite of how I was in school. And I do not put any pressure on her. Like she puts enough pressure on herself. And this is what I see with young women and young, you know, young women in the workplace across the board is, I think what has happened is we have been taught that we can achieve anything as women now. We have you know, what's the saying? It's like the world is your oyster. You can do anything. You could be a mom. You can be a CEO. You could do all these things. And when you're in the school system, you can put your head down and you can focus. But once you get into the real world, there's a whole other set of rules that we are not taught. And so this sort of life skills, and this is why I, you know, I'm so passionate about, I joke, but it's not really a joke, is that everything I teach women is how to be successful, right? All the things you need to know to be successful but that nobody ever told you, but you need to know. Nobody talks about this stuff. It's just like how it works. You get all the A's, you know, you go to the great school, you do this. That doesn't mean you're going to just be, you know, there's no career fairy that's just going to be like, oh, here's your path.
Well, it goes back to the practice piece and the value of the practice, because we can be whatever we want to be, but it is not just handed. It is, you have to engage in the process. You have to engage in the building. And I also love what you're talking about with engaging your kids in the solution of your, or engaging them in how you are feeling and the options, because it, what I'm thinking is, gosh, it allows them to see and experience that emotion without it being theirs, and think through how they might handle it, or think through how you handle it, but then they can use that when they then have that emotion. That's just feels super powerful.
Because what you're doing is you're normalizing it.
Yes.
And what happens is, because we don't talk about this stuff, and it's no different, like how I talk to my kids is the same as when I talk to, you know, leaders in organizations that are struggling with some sort of emotion, but they don't realize that everybody else is struggling with the same thing.
Yes. Yes.
So it's, you know, it's like creating a priming them with giving them, oh, wait, even though they're whatever, 2-3 years old, they're hearing me work through a problem, a real problem. They're seeing my emotion around it. So then what do our kids do? Like they can mirror us. And how then the goal is that once they come up with a problem, whatever it is, they think to themselves, okay, mommy's gone through this before, or I bet you mommy has. And it creates the space to like, just for them to even think about it, but then to ask the question.
Well, and think, gosh, I'm not so lonely. I'm not so weird or abnormal to have this happening in my head. And that's also why this conversation is so important, because we all probably have a lot of feelings like that too now that are new. But if we're not talking about those tough things, then we feel totally alone in that experience. So
1000%, especially because, you know, we're inundated every day with what I call the highlight reel, not the real reel. And so we're just seeing these constant images of these women, you know, in this example, women who are moms who are getting promotions and they look perfect and running around, you know, traveling the world and all of the things. And the truth is that that's not real.
Yeah.
And whoever is, the fact that we even can see that person doing all those things means that that person has to be intentionally designing a way to capture and look a certain way for others, right? And so the more that we focus on how we want others to see us, usually sign that we ourselves are insecure or not feeling that we have to overemphasize the external because we are empty and alone internally.
Yeah. Oh, so much there. So much there. I before we move on to, because I do want to talk to you a little bit about that, about how you know, these people that you're seeing in the highlight reel, it is, some of those things are actually happening, but there's just a lot more layers to them, right? Like there's the bad, the hard stuff. They're exhausted. They're probably getting help from a multiple other people once they're at a certain success level. I do want to talk to you about that, but before we shift totally, there's one other thing I want to touch on, motherhood. You, with a 13 and 11 year old, one of the things, by the way, y'all will plug Jamie's LinkedIn and all the places you can follow her. But one of the things you recently started posting about was your conversation in cards with kids. And I'm loving them. I'm loving them for a lot of reasons. One, super relatable. Two, raising kids and the conversations you're having with your kids is so relevant to adults too. Like so much of what you say, the conversations are with your kids. I'm like, yeah, that's a good reminder for me. And then three, you're doing it on LinkedIn, which I don't know about you, but one of the reasons we're starting this community is because I don't think enough people are talking about life holistically. And LinkedIn is very, yes, it's business focused and it's work focused, but just because you're an employee or an employer doesn't mean you're not a human and have a life outside of it. So you're sharing all of this on LinkedIn too, which I absolutely love. So thank you for doing that. But can you share a little bit? One of the stories you shared was the talking to your 13-year-old about saying sorry. And this one hit me like straight gut punch, great reminder. Could you recap the story? And then I'd love to know kind of what triggered you when she said sorry, like what was your experience kind of hearing that from your daughter and wanting to have that conversation with her?
Yes. Well, we have as women, and I, again, cause I'm like tuned into this, I've worked with lots of women who are apologizing all the time for things. And I'm like, why are you? I mean, I literally did it with a woman this morning who is, I think, in her 50s. And she's apologizing. And I'm like, why are you apologizing? So it's a habit. It's similar to saying the word like. I find, for women, for young girls. It starts, and we know all the data around young girls, and when they get into middle school and high school and they stop raising their hand, they don't want to be the smart one. They kind of are like, we become almost like we're apologizing for being in the room. And when you apologize for no reason, it actually lowers your how you're seen. Like, you don't have a reason to apologize, but if I start saying I'm sorry, it immediately takes you down a notch in terms of, like, I don't know, this sort of like invisible hierarchy of a conversation, because you're apologizing from the beginning. So you're already under, like, the ground. And so I explained to my daughter, I said, you know, she got in the car. I think I was taking her in a pole vault or getting her from pole vault. She's a pole vaulter. Another thing I would never do. including getting A's in school. And she gets in the car and she says, sorry. And I'm like, honey, why are you saying you're sorry? She's like, I don't know. And I explained to her exactly what I just said, is like, do you know that when you say sorry for no reason, that it makes you look weak? She looks at me. And I said, I want you to promise me, I know it's a habit, but I want you to promise me that you're going to, instead of saying sorry, you're going to work on replacing sorry with thank you. So she said, okay, I will work on doing that. So it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
But most people will say, we'll just stop saying sorry. But the problem is, we need to actually take it one step further and explain why.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
for it to actually stick and it be meaningful enough to want to change the habit.
Yeah, it is a foundational problem that we have as women. So the earlier I feel, and I told her this, I said, the earlier that I can get you out of this habit so that you don't, you know, go into college or go into the workplace doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's you're in what I call your war room. You're working against yourself, working against results.
Yeah, it's one of the memories that post brought me to was, I can't remember where I heard this or how I started it, but I would always say sorry for the delay in my email, and it's like, you know, we're all busy. I didn't respond in a few minutes. That doesn't mean I need to apologize. And so what I would literally write it and then delete it and replace it with thank you for your patience. And it's saying the intent of me saying sorry is the same as me saying thank you for your patience, but the power dynamic and the message is so different in terms of how it's received. So I loved that. And I love that you're having those direct, honest, open conversations with your kids and sharing them for those like me that, you know, need to hear it too sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, and this is all, again, it's practice. Like, these are all things that I've noticed that are problems or things, like, what are the things where we're working against ourselves? I mean, I have had in my career a habit of saying, I'm sorry. For no reason, until I started to notice it with other women. And I'm like, why are you saying, I know it's a habit. And I'm like, stop it. You know, we're like going to give you a sorry jar. But this concept, it's more of like, the sorry thing is a very specific example, though, of how I see women, like, apologizing for, like I said, being in the room, having an opinion, raising their voice.
Yeah.
And I think the way that we do it, or the way that we enter these conversations, I think it puts us already on a lower level, which then produces lots of situations where we don't feel heard.
Yeah, 100%. And I actually think that's a beautiful way to transition into your career, because you've had a lot of success to the point of, unfortunately, breaking it at points, and in, fair for me to say, in relatively male dominated fields, we've both come up in the sales profession, you know, there's a lot of powerful women and amazing women through the ranks, but it historically and still is very male dominated. And so I would love for, you know, you've had an inspirational career. You started your career, and these are my words, so jump in at any point, but from sales, you know, in sports, sales and marketing with the Patriots, the MLS, FIFA, you went to sales leadership. You were at Gartner for 13 years. You started businesses, and now you hold a CEO role as a really successful coach and keynote speaker. Can you take us a little bit on that journey with you on what some of those pivots were like, what some of the tough moments were, and anything you learned along the way?
I have a few different pivotal moments. I'm going to talk about three.
Okay.
So one, remember I told you I was the underdog?
Yes.
And so I got into sports and I really liked sports. I loved playing basketball, but I really wasn't big enough or good enough to play in college. But then I went to Bryant University, and I was supposed to walk onto the soccer team, and they called me, they had a spot to bring me to preseason. So I like was, you know, supposed to be a walk on my freshman year. I think I played, I don't even know, like maybe 30 seconds. So position was left bench.
Yeah.
But by the time I got to be a junior, I was the captain of the team. And so my son actually, I'm going to probably do a post about this. But my son was asking me, he's like, cause he's a big basketball player. He's like, you know, were you as good as me in college and high school? And I was like, I actually wasn't that good. But what I was good is reading the room, meaning reading the field or the court that I was on, and reading my teammates and understanding where I played soccer. So I went in soccer, I played the stopper position, which is kind of in the middle of the field. So I'm sort of a dot connector. So I could figure out how do I move this to like actually to win, right? To move forward. So that was me moving forward in sort of showing that I could, yes, I could compete in college. And then the thing that I wanted to talk about that was a pivotal moment for me was they switched our coach, and I had this like awful coach. And I don't want to get into too much details, but there was a situation where I was driving the van of the team, all the freshmen, and I was driving the van with my coach, and my coach was just a terrible driver, which is part of the reason why I'm like kind of a mama bear. I've always been, they call me mama bear. And he wanted me to drive and do something that was really dangerous. And I said, no, I don't feel comfortable. And it was an example of a male in leadership position who did not want to be told no, even though it was like an unsafe driving situation. And it turned into a massive problem where he ended up getting fired. But before he got fired, I basically got benched for the majority of my senior year because I was protecting the team. My point in this is that in the moment, I did the right thing according to my leadership values to protect the team. But at the time, there was nobody had my back because people wanted to play. So my reason of saying this is that, you know, I have, you know, I would have like 4 years, 10 years, up to 20 years later, women coming back to me saying, thank you for protecting us.
But still in that moment, probably felt incredibly shame. Like, what were you feeling in that moment when you did what you felt like was right, but no one had your back?
Yeah, there's this quote, I think it says, it's like doing the right thing is never the wrong thing. But in the moment, it really sucks because you're doing what you know is the right thing to protect people. But if you're going to stand up and be a true leader, you're going to have a lot of scars. There's going to be a lot of shit that comes at you. And so that was a pivotal moment for me of like, at the end of the day, what do? You back your team up. You support your team. You protect your team, whether it's your family, your team at work, like you have their back. And if you break from that, like my core value is courage. I didn't know this back then, but now I understand. So, and that means when I say courage, it means that I'm going to speak up even if I'm uncomfortable. I'm not afraid to try new things. And if I don't know the answer, I'm going to tell you. So that speaking up, even though I was uncomfortable, was something that I leaned into back at that early age in college that I didn't have to, but I did. And it caused a whole bunch of problems. But I will say that right now that that is my first experience of really leaning into leadership.
Oh.
So that was one pivotal, right? Clue. Yep. The second was I went after graduation, I moved to New York to, I worked at a magazine and 9/11 happened. I was from Boston. So I, you know, I moved to New York by myself and I was in New York on 9/11. And quickly after 9/11, I lost my job. My first real job out of school. So back then, there was no jobs. Like after 9/11, there were no jobs. So I actually went back to school. I had to pay my bills. My parents wanted me to move home. I said, no, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure it out on my own. So I went and I started waitressing and bartending. And why I share this is because it was in the situation of experiencing 9/11 and having this sort of shame of losing my job, because back then that was before LinkedIn. And, you know, it wasn't like, it was like this feeling of feeling so grateful to be, you know, all the, there's terrible things happening and people lost their lives. So feeling so grateful for being alive and safe, yet feeling like such a loser that I had lost my job. So with that, I became really fascinated because I was spending my days hustling, trying to, you know, count quarters to like to pay my rent. But I became really fascinated by what was it that when bad things happen, what makes some people push forward and keep going? And what makes people, you know, back off on their heels and retreat in failure? And it became very fascinating to me because I'm talking with people all day long at the bar and waitressing and trying to hustle for tips, but like hearing their stories and just listening to like, so that became a foundational thing for me. I'm like, this is really interesting. I want to understand, how do I unlock that? So that was the point where I said, I want to go back to school for this. So I actually went back and got my master's when this happened in industrial organizational psychology, which was this study of how do people behave and how to understand how to move people forward in an organization.
Yeah.
So, but it was because of what coming out of this whole terrible experience that I realized, I'm like, this is a passion for me. And I realized that it linked back to how did I activate and had this strength of activating my teammates and, you know, what I did right in working in teams, those two pieces. So that's when I went and got my master's, and that's how I actually got my job at Gartner, through the bar. And
I love that so much because, you know, your LinkedIn profile doesn't say that, right? Like I don't think you have your bartending job on there, which it's amazing that one that led you to a 13-year run at Gartner and this incredible learning and thirst, what ended up being your master and so much of your career. I love that so much is it's the beauty in this not embracing the non-linear and the tough points along the way. If you can embrace them, you just have no idea what could come out of embracing it. And your stories are proof of that. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like leaning in. It's like resist. It's like the resistance is usually what creates your road. Mm. Right. So how you're, one of my favorite books when I went out on my own and started my own business was The Obstacle is the Way. And that's really true. It's really true. But there is something I do want to mention, because I know there's a lot of moms, professional moms on this. when I went to Gartner, my background was actually, I had this master's in organizational psychology. My background was in business and marketing. So when I went to Gartner, I actually jumped into marketing. So I was running Gartner events. I was doing events there. And why I'm sharing this was because I was in this marketing role, but I was frustrated because I felt like I was really like running circles around a lot of these other people, but they were making so much more money than me because I was early in my career. And so I was like in a manager title, but then I heard that Gartner was starting this program for very junior salespeople. It was a new program. So I then said, you know, I learned through my time at Gartner talking with customers at events. I'm like, I'm so passionate about talking and helping people solve problems. And I learned that through being at Gartner events and working in the bar. But I then took a chance to interview for this very junior sales position. So I'm saying from a title perspective, I'm going from a manager position to this like sales associate coordinator, whatever position. I'm taking a step back. And why I did it was because I said, you know, if I'm ever at that point, I was like, I think I want to go into market, like be a CMO. I don't know, but I need to know how to sell. But I took this sort of step, you know, that was this non-traditional thing. And by the way, most people with a master's in organizational psychology go into HR. They don't go into sales, but I stayed the sales path. So my point around this reoccurring theme of being an underdog was I was the first person Gartner had ever hired as an outside salesperson that didn't have a sales background. They took a chance on me and they won.
Heck yeah, they did.
Heck yeah, they did. But my point about this is that I was trusting my gut, and I know there's a lot of people who like, oh, I don't want, you know, it's about the title. And it's really, that's what society tells us. It's about the title. But I know a lot of people in high titles that are miserable and are terrible at what they do. So, you know, really thinking about what do you want to learn? What is the thing what is a skill that you're eager to learn and get better at versus this just going for a title?
It's interesting. I'm actually on the market right now looking for my next thing. And oftentimes people are like, your background, you've done a lot of different things across go-to-market, your background's, you know, varied. What do you want to do? What role do you want? And I'm like, I don't really care what role it actually. I'm not looking for a very specific title. It's like, what problems are you trying to solve that my experience and who I am as a human that I feel like I can make an impact on? And will I have the ability to learn? Like, impact and learning are probably the biggest two things that I'm thinking about in terms of my career. So that everything you just said relates so much, so much, that it's not always about the linear path, about the title, about what you're on paper you should be doing and pursuing. It's so much about kind of listening to what it is that you want to learn, what
right,
you want to do.
And being intentional about it. I think one of the things I see over and over repeatedly as I, ironically, when I was in college, I did my like, whatever, my final thesis. It was all on gender in the media. At that point, social media really didn't exist. I'm totally dating myself here. But this fascination with how women and men behave and this underpinning, and it's interesting, is they will want the role. So they just jump in and start leaning into it and doing it and expecting the promotion. Whereas men typically say, yeah, you want to achieve that? Or give me the team under me and I'll do it. And the problem becomes is that we already just lean into it because it's just like, we want to help. We want to solve problems. Whereas the guys, they know innately, I guess maybe the same way we know to say sorry, that they know how to push for what they want. So,
What's the advice? What do you, when you see that with women, so much of your work is to figure out how to empower people to do those things. What do you do? How do you coach people through that?
Coach them to communicate. Well, there's a variety of things around it. You have to understand the person that you're trying to sell the role or pitch it to, and what they need to hear. Without going into it too much, but people, there are four different types of people. There are fast people, there are feel people, there are focused people, and there are facts people. So if you speak feel to a facts person, they're not going to hear you. If you try to move fast to a focused person, they're going to freak out and shut you down. So what you have to do is identify and bottle up what is the outcome that your boss or whoever you're pitching, like, why is this, what is the need? How does it tie to a financial dollar? And then explain, show your case of, okay, this can be achieved by putting me into this role. And if you're looking to, you know, create this role, what would the expectation be? And then what would be the compensation? This is key. What is the compensation that's tied to it? Because what's happening is, I'm seeing this everywhere, is like, you're basically leaning in, doing the role. You're not getting any additional compensation. So if they want to achieve the results, they need to align it with an increase in what they're paying you, and, you know, boxing out like what this additional need is. Because that's why we have so many women that just tap out and then they leave. And then what do? They hire three people to replace them. Sure, you've heard that before.
Oh, sure, I have. I sure have. My gosh, our time is flying, and we have so much more to talk about that I want to make sure we get to. Win room, war room, and how all of these experiences have led you to Infirst Consulting and what you're doing now. So maybe we can spend the next few minutes on win room, war room. So for those of you who have not heard Jamie's TED Talk, we will put the link in the show notes to make it really easy. But if you're at your computer now, if you're driving, don't do this. But if you're at your computer now, type in from war room to win room, change your room, change your life. I've listened to it 3 times. I love it. I will listen to it more. But Jamie, you, so much of this is relevant for this community. You, the whole way that you begin this talk is talking about your journey, one, in what a war room is in the sales world, but then as a mother of having your first baby, your water breaking at 9 months and still working at the office for another 2 hours, having a stress-induced numbing of your legs reaction when you had 2 kids and you were leaning into work. Talk a little bit about what that journey was like from, you know, being a mother and being in the work and having those two worlds kind of collide and create challenge in your world.
Yeah. Thank you. So it's interesting. Like, I get the tingles like in my legs when you're talking about it. Cause it doesn't go away. So anyway, so we'll get into this. So
no,
and it's a good thing. I mean, it's a reminder, right? So the war room, just in terms of, it's a term used in sales, but it's used in businesses, in sort of like, we have a problem. We all need to get together. It's a fast paced, we have to get a strategy and we need to move. And so for me, I did well in my sales role, and I was one of the leaders, and we would be running the war rooms, right? Like, how are we triaging? How are we getting deals moving forward? And what I, doing that over time, like, so much, right? Like, you're in this high adrenaline, everything. There is no slowing down. And this was back in 2015. So if I think about the compounded rate of how fast we're moving now compared to that, when with this, I was working all the time. And yeah, so I share in my talk, you know, I was working, once I was literally ready to have the baby, and I'm like on my computer, like, not worried about the baby. I'm just worried about work, and kept doing that. Even though I, if I listen back and I think back, like, there definitely were whispers, but everybody was working at that pace. Essentially, one day I won't give it all away, but I'm going to share this. This is important. One day I was meeting with clients and I suddenly couldn't feel my legs. And I couldn't walk. And so that I had at that point, so I had two kids, I had both my kids, they were 4 and 2. And after, you know, talking to all the doctors and thinking like, oh my God, am I going to die? They said it was stress. And so what I realized was that I was living in a war room in my head. And so this constant battle, I was battling with myself and holding the stress in my body and not having a way to get rid of it. So I just kept piling it on, piling on. This was how my body was breaking. So this realization that I was living in a war room in my head, but the reality was that if you looked up from the outside, I was winning. So I was like a top performer, you know, I've got these two great kids, you know, great family, but I was like empty and alone on the inside.
I feel that so to my core. Everybody's experience is unique. I am not saying I could put myself in your shoes. What you went through sounds absolutely horrifying, terrifying. And I could get emotional because so many women I talk to, and even in my own life, can relate to that feeling of it all looks like from the outside, like it's perfect. That highlight reel that you talk about, not the real reel. The real reel is, yeah, there's a lot of good in my life, but holy shit, I'm lonely, or I'm sad, or I'm scared, or there can be both of those things, and you don't always see it. So I thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, so this concept of where we're in our war room, we work against ourselves, we work against results. That's what the war room stands for. So we each have two rooms in our head. That one side that we're very good at living in, specifically as moms, but what I've found through my work is that it's not just women, it's men too.
Absolutely.
They're stuck in their war rooms in their head, doubting themselves, self-sabotaging, focusing on your weaknesses, overcommitting, overwhelming yourself. And so we're very, very good at continuing like over and over again, beating ourselves up about all the things that we are not good at. We literally work against ourselves, work against the results we're trying to. And that war room is not a good place to be. But you can't get out of it until you like notice it. And it's a choice. And that's what I teach people, because on the other side of the war room is our win room. And our win room is where we focus on what I need. That is what win stands for. It is foundationally, what do I need for myself? Where are my values? What am I strong in? What do I want? Because the three things that keep us stuck in the war room are head trash, lack of clarity, and comparison. So the head trash is all the things, right? You think somebody told you at whatever time that you're not a good mom or this or this or this, and you hold on to that. So learning how to take out the head trash, getting clear on what you actually want, not what other people want, and how to stop comparing yourself to everyone.
Yes.
Because you do that and you're comparing yourself and you're basically saying, well, I want this, I want this. And I'm like, why do you want it? Because you see other people. So basically you're chasing everybody else's dreams, not your own.
Listen to the TED Talk because there's so much more. Jamie, you're generous for giving us what you did. And I want everyone to go listen because Jamie really talks through how to identify the head trash and what she does to remind herself that, oh, that's head trash. and then how to make that choice. Yes, that choice to move into the win room. I would love to just pivot this into what you're doing today, because this, your career, your experiences have been so impactful on who you are, that you're now doing it day to day. How are you helping leaders today? How are you helping companies today? With this all in mind.
Well, when I went through this experience as a leader, I had to figure out my own way out of it because I couldn't talk about it. So I started to create practices for how do I shift, right? And I started practicing, kind of like how I was saying how I practice with my kids, right? How do you practice? It's all about practice, putting it into practice. So I started it with my teams, and I started adding, you know, different practices in with my teams to get to help the people on my teams with where their heads are at, right? So it's really building the mindsets, the skill sets, and tool sets to be successful. And so often we are given the sort of focused on the skill, like on the skills and the tools, but the mindset's not there. Or maybe the mindset's there, but they don't have the skill. So what I do today is literally what I created out of my own need. And it's called the Win Room Program. It's the win-win formula, the win-win method. And so it's a combination of it's coaching. So it's group coaching and training for teams. And it's specifically when we think about the win-win method, it's what I need as the individual combined with what's important now for the leader. Because the leaders could say, I need you to, you know, sell more. I need you to do this. I need you to be more productive. Well, no kidding. But the only way to get there is to first focus on the individual and unlock in these invisible barriers of what they need. What do they need for themselves so they can then tie it to the goals of where the leader wants to go. So both win. It's a win-win leadership style. So I teach this to leaders. I teach it to teams. What it does, it takes your people from kind of spaghetti on the wall, right? All over the place, to like rocket guided, GPS guided missiles, just hitting the mark every time because they're clear in who they are. They're not trying to be everything that they're not. And it's basically removing the 80% of stuff that they're holding on today, but they don't need, and capitalizing on the 20%, which is their strength. And so when we remove the things, right, it's like less is the new more. When we remove this stuff and we get them super clear on their direction and velocity, they win.
Oh, Jamie, every company needs to invest in this for their leaders. Where can, you know, I know I could talk to you for hours. I know that our listeners would love to hear more from you. They can find you on LinkedIn, but where else can they find you, learn more about Inverse Consulting and the win-win formula?
Yeah, well, on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's pretty much my go-to with everything. I am on Instagram. I'm not as good about Instagram, but meaning like, I, you know, who has the capacity? I joke yeah, that there should be a LinkedIn, there should be a social media algorithm for working moms, which is like random times at like midnight, or like half a post that doesn't get actually posted, or, you know, that you were supposed to do, but you had to take your kid to the doctor appointment, you know? Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. my Instagram is Winroom Coach, but LinkedIn is the best place to contact me.
Amazing. Is there anything else you wanted to make sure to share today?
If you're listening to this and you're questioning yourself about how you're parenting, you know, being able to do it all, you're not alone. And just the fact that you are questioning means that you're a good mom. Because if you weren't thinking about it, well, you wouldn't be human. But, you know, you want to get better and you want to show up as a good, you know, a good mom, as a good professional. And yeah, it is really hard, and you cannot do it all. You have to make choices at different points in your life based off of the age of your kids, and just making sure that I call it your real AI, your aim and your intention, and everything you do is tied to what you care about. Right. And so if you're focused on what you like, if you really in your heart, it's like what you care about, what you want, and you align everything around that, then you're going to win. You just have to do the work to really own that and trust your gut, trust yourself.
Thank you so much. I truly, I mean, what a perfect way to wrap it up. And look at you, the underdog early on to this beacon of hope and of tools for people to really own their own journey. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Jamie.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. This has been great.
Okay, so that was supposed to be a wrap for Jamie and I's conversation, but we kept talking. And frankly, we wanted you to hear what that conversation continued to look like, because that's what this is all about. So keep listening. We were not technically recording, but again, we want this podcast to be real. So here's some more real for you.
All my commentary throughout was genuine. I just love, like, I just relate so much to your journey and and how you're helping people today. It's just so, it's amazing.
Thank you. I mean, I think that one of the bigger challenges, I didn't say this in there, but I don't have a solve for it, but everything I do and I teach people is the tools and how to notice it. How do you normalize it so you can neutralize it, right? You can remove it. But this challenge is that our parents, our moms had the kids, and then they figured out how to fit in a career. Over the last 30 years, now we have the career and we're trying to fit in the kids. And that's one of the biggest challenges that I see, is like, if you had the kids first and then the career, it's easier. Like, it's like you're, you know, it's like with your first kid versus your second kid, like you have a foundation, a solid foundation of what matters. And so I think the challenge is now that, you know, you're having the career and then having the kids later, you feel like you have to make like this, you take a step back. I mean, I talked to a young woman yesterday about it, because she feels like she's so ambitious, but feels like she needs to take a step back because she still wants to take care of her kids. And I think a lot of it is just pressure that we put on ourselves.
So much.
Nobody's putting it on. I mean, we're putting it on ourselves. So the acknowledgement of that, and it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, that's the order used to be. You have your kids, then you have a career, if you have a career. But that's the opposite. And that's a real, real struggle.
I've got the two, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm stumbling through 3.5 and 6.5. So I have daycare and first grade.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, I don't know if you'd ever thought of it that way. Like,
I have never thought of it that way. And I think it's really, I mean, it's so true. I think about my mom, I think about my grandma. That all checks out. And I was already, you know, I was already a VP of sales, and getting pregnant with my first daughter, thinking, how am I going to work the way I'm working right now and maintain the success with my daughter coming into this world? And I know she's going to be the most important thing, but how can I possibly marry those two? And it's, you know, I mean, it's a struggle every day, and my anxiety is my worst enemy and sometimes my best friend in terms of preparing me for something. But yeah, it's hard. It's really hard.
I think, yes, it is hard, but I also think a lot of it is we put on, a lot of the standards that we set for ourselves are completely unrealistic. And nobody talks about it. Everybody's just like, you know, obviously in this world of, you know, it's like fake book, and you see what everybody else is doing, or even something as simple as, you know, I had to acknowledge the fact that I'm not going to be the mom that goes into school and does the things with the kids.
I think it was in your TED talk, not in one of your posts, but when you said, I don't make my kids dinner. And this person was insinuating that that meant I wasn't a good mom. And it's like, no, that's the heart of, there are trade-offs. If you want to have it all, you can have it all, but you can't do it all at a certain, like this crazy standard. Like, you need to make choices. You need to ask for help in certain areas. You can't go to school and be the room parent. you know?
Well, yeah, I hear these moms. It's like, I'll hear, this is what I'll literally hear from new moms. All right. And they just had a kid and they'll say, well, I think I'm gonna go get my master's, or I'm gonna go and do this. And I'm like, you literally just had a kid. Give yourself some grace. You do not have to go check everything off right now.
Okay, so I'll leave you with this. We had a great chat and it kept on going. But one of the things I want to leave this group with is give yourself some grace. Take it from Jamie. Give yourself some grace. You do not need to do it all at this moment or for someone else. Decide what's most important to you and craft the road there. Your way, your road. Remember, we're just getting started here at the Balance is Bullshit podcast, and we need your support. And I'm not scared to ask for it. If you liked today's episode, tell us what you liked about it. Share it with a friend or two. Let us know who you want to hear from. Thank you. And see you soon.